What up, though? Welcome to the Laptop Chronicles. As always, man, if this is your first time tuning in, thank you for tuning in. I hope you come back. If it's not your first time tuning in, thank you for coming back and listen to me talk about whatever it is I'm going to talk about. So, today, I had an idea to talk about, like, the 50 Shades of Grey series and all that. Then I thought to myself, nah, that's been done. That's been, you know, talked about over and over. And then I said, well, okay, so what direction can I take this? And then I got to thinking about, you know, the history of the you know, 50 Shades of Grey, because a lot of people like it because it's, you know, quote unquote, you know, BDSM fantasy, erotic fantasy, erotic literature. And then I thought to myself, well, where did that all come from? So if you know me, you know that I absolutely love history, right? I'm a complete history nerd. And so that pointed me toward the door to the rabbit hole. So, of course, me being me, I walked towards it. And then I started looking at the history of BDSM. And I found some really, really interesting things. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about a brief, slight history of BDSM and as it's moved through the world and move through civilizations. So, you know, let's get it started. So first, the term itself, what does it mean? It consists of, okay, so you have the B and the D, the bondage and the discipline, the D and the S, the dominance and submission, the S and the S and the M, sadism and sadomasochism, right? Now, I did find that the first use of the term is saying that it was coined in 1991 in an online forum. But then I also found that the term originated as a whole, as a catch-all phrase, in 1969. So, you know, that's the thing about historical research is, you know, somewhere somebody's gonna say something, and you know, somewhere somebody else gonna say something else. So anywhere between those two dates, the idea of the term BDSM came to be. So the term itself, or the idea of it, dates back to Mesopotamian era. Now we know the Mesopotamian region is pretty much modern day Iraq, right? That's the earliest records, the earliest visual and written records of what BDSM was. And it is associated with the goddess Inanna or Ishtar. And so what it came to be was something that dealt with rituals, right? A lot of flagellation, which is better known as caning or using a whip, and it became associated with pain and ecstasy, being in an altered state of consciousness, punishment, moaning, and leaving the participants in a euphoric state of weeping. And when you think about it, it's like, damn, that's pretty much what some sex turns out to be, those things. So I think it's pretty cool that the idea of sex that, you know, people experience today, or sexual situations that people experience today, is nothing new. It's pretty much been going on for thousands and thousands of years, you know. So then we slide on over to the ancient Greek civilization, and that's pretty much very similar to the situations that they had, very similar to what was going on in Mesopotamia. And that's the thing about history, is that it, you know, a lot of, from known history, I'll put it to you that way, because there is a lot of history that is not known, that has not been studied, which that's my goal in life, is to find all of that shit. So, you know, a lot of what is known is that a lot of concepts just migrated area to area. People may have put, you know, a new spin on it, or they may have put their own touches on it, but the idea historical concepts have not changed. So in ancient Greece, they pretty much were using the rituals in the same manner that they were using them in Mesopotamia. And then from there, we slide on over to the area what we consider today like modern day India, Pakistan, in that region. And we look at the Kama Sutra. Now, the Kama Sutra is widely known as a book with just a lot of sexual positions, right? That's how I've always viewed it, you know, when watching, I remember back in the day watching Real Sex, and they talked about it, and, you know, you use this book, and it's supposed to help you and your partner or partners get to a level of like sexual enlightenment through raising your spiritual, your mental, and your emotional levels combined with the physical, and then boom, you're supposed to be, you know, some, you know, on some sex god level. I don't know, that was always my understanding of it. But what I come to learn is that the book is much more, or the idea of it is way much more than that, right? And what the book stresses is respect for your partner or partners, right? And it also, like, one of the things that it stresses most importantly is that it does advocate for impact play, right? Which impact play, you could think of it as like spanking, you know, something like that. But it advocates for that, biting, scratching, like things like that during sex, as long as you have the proper consent from your partner or partners, right? And the book, or the Kama Sutra, was developed what they consider from the years 490 BCE, that's before Common Era, and 90 CE, Common Era. So you're looking at almost like 500 years of the development of this idea, on the, you know, the basis of how you should proceed during your sexual situations. So I think that's pretty cool, man, because, you know, you're looking at like 2,000 years and we still are using these same concepts in a very positive way, you know, to highlight being safe and getting consent during sex and doing things the right way, you know. So from there, we slide on over to Japan. Now, I didn't know a lot about the you know, this part of the sexual history that goes on in Japan, but it was really cool to learn, you know, especially because I lived in Japan for a couple years, and it is a very, very interesting society. I love it over there. I know a lot of people went over there and they were like, "Nah, I'm staying. I'm not going back to the States." You know, Japan is real cool. And so I've taken some classes on Asian history, and the one thing that is a common theme in history is that when you're looking at that part of the world, a lot of the history started with China, like the Chinese empires, as they migrated up, and then they moved, you know, a lot of people look at the history of the empires and conquerors of the Korean Peninsula. And then you have Japan just kind of sitting out there, right? And Japan has always kind of had its own society because there was really no outside influence, because it's, you know, back in those days, it's hard to get to. A lot of emperors and conquerors had tried, but a lot of them really didn't make it to Japan. So Japan has always been a civilization that developed on its own up until like the 1800s, when like Commodore Perry like moved into Tokyo in the Western world, forced it, you know, what was widely considered them forcing their way into Japan. which highlighted by one of my favorite movies, The Last Samurai. Watch that. It's really good. So with Japan being, you know, a civilization that got to develop on its own, they developed a lot of different concepts. And so one of them is they had a martial art that was dedicated to bondage and humiliation. And it was called Hojo-jitsu. And it was developed in the 1500s. And what this was the art of rope restraint, right? And so captured criminals or enemies would be bound in elaborate rope configurations and secret knots to prevent escape. Now, some people out there, y'all already know where I'm going with this, right? And the one cool thing is that the knots and the rope configurations were not just for the capture and holding criminals. They had to be pleasing to the eye, right? And so I thought that was really cool because I'm very, very, very amateur in my role play, but I've seen some dope ass role play. Like there was this woman in Michigan, and I used to know her profile, but I haven't been on FetLife in a while. But her role play was, something that I'd never seen before. The colors, the knots, the design, it was just absolutely amazing, right? And so, further on in my learning and of this, I see that the role play was also, the bondage of these criminals in this society was also for public humiliation, right? They would bound them up and then take them through the town or whatever was going on at that time. And so this idea was the precursor to what is known as Shibari Orenbaku, or modern day what we call Shibari, which is a rope concept that is still used today. And also, so the light bulb went off for me in reading this, because it was a couple years ago. I had gone to the Detroit Institute of Art. They had a samurai exhibit, right? I love samurai culture. And so they had this samurai exhibit. And of course, you can't take pictures in there, but I snuck the pictures in there. I snuck my camera in there, was taking pictures. And it hit me. So I've seen a lot of Japanese art. And when you look at the murals, there's a lot of characters in it, right? And some of these characters are shown in different positions, being bound up and being, they almost look like they're fighting. Sometimes, they're being taken through different situations. And looking at this, I kind of was under the idea like, wow, Japanese people, in the 1500s, 1400s, they really had, a lot of sex. Like, they're really into some freaky shit. But after learning this, I started to realize, like, wait a minute. These were situations where people may have been captured criminals or enemies and were being taken through the town or whatever. So it wasn't that Japanese people are freaky or anything, or they did not base anything on sex. They were catching criminals. Like, wow, like that light bulb really went off. So I really, really like that. So I have a book on Shibari roleplay, and I don't think I've opened it. I need to. Now I'm really gonna get into this, man, now that I learned this, because it's just pretty cool. So from there, we slide on over to Europe, all right? And so this was a pretty interesting read, especially learning about what the history of the S, which is sadism. So We're looking at France in the 1700s, right? And there was this French nobleman. His name was Marquis de Sade. And the term sadism was named after him. And so he wrote this book called 120 Days of Sodom. And it's described as one of the first pornographic and erotic literature works of art. And it was written in 1785. And it tells the story of four wealthy libertines, which the term libertine pretty much means like a hypersexual. And it's their quest in the ultimate sexual gratification through like orgies, violence, and sexual abuse. And so I'm you know, reading the information for this book, and I'm like, wow, like the shit is wild. You know what I'm saying? So it's based on these four wealthy men who are bishops, aristocrats, bankers, and they enjoy sodomy. Now, sodomy in very rude terms is pretty much anal sex, right? So I'm gonna give you a description of some of the characters, some of the main characters in this book. The Duke of Blangy, age 50, an aristocrat who acquired his wealth by poisoning his mother for the purposes of inheritance, prescribing the same fate to his sister when she found out his plot. Blangy is described as being tall, strongly built, and highly sexual potent, although it is emphasized that he is a complete coward and proud of it. The bishop is Blangy's brother. He's 45, a scrawny and weak man with a nasty mouth. He greatly enjoys sodomy, especially passive sodomy. He enjoys combining murder with sex, and he refuses to have vaginal intercourse. And then, so, like, the book is based on, you know, these four men. There's two other characters, I'm not gonna read them. But they lock themselves away in this castle in the Black Forest, right? So you have the four main characters, and then you have four prostitutes who accompany these men, right? So I'm gonna read you the character descriptions for a couple of these characters. Madame Chanville, 50, partial to have her 3-inch clitoris tickled by females. She was a virgin, but her rear is flabby and worn from use, so much so that she feels nothing there. Madame Martinet, 52, especially excited by anal sex, and natural deformity prevents her from having any other kind. Madame de Granger, 56, pale, emaciated, with dead eyes, whose anus is so large she does not feel anything there, missing one nipple, 3 fingers, 6 teeth, and an eye. That's wild. So then it talks about there's 8 studs who I don't even know the French word, but it's translated into fuckers. There's 8 studs who are revered for their large penises. And then it talks about the victims. There's 8 boys and 8 girls who all range from age 12 to 15. And so these four men and four prostitutes and these victims, they all sexually abused these young victims at this castle. Which I'm like, I'm reading this shit and I'm like, wait a minute, didn't we just fucking go through this shit? Like, didn't this kind of shit just get made public with the whole Jeffrey Epstein thing? And Epstein didn't kill himself. And it's like, you know, you read this and it talks, you know, talks about wealthy men satisfying their sexual urges, you know, sexual gratification in the worst way. And it's like, wow, this shit really, you know, is really happening through history. And here we are, like, seeing this happen. You know, rich, powerful, you know, people from different parts of society committing these, you know, sexual abuse acts. And so the book wasn't published until like the 20th century. You know, naturally, you know, a lot of governments banned the book because it, you know, so controversial. And there have been a couple of movies made out of it. I think the most famous movie being made in 1975. So that was interesting tidbit to find. And then, so we slide on over to, let me see, I got my notes here somewhere. Yeah, I went complete nerd, wrote down the notes and everything. And so we look at the term sadomasochism, right? And it was coined after this Austrian author named Leopold von Sacher-Masoch, which I'm pretty sure I just butchered this guy's name because I don't have an accent, but it's all good. And he wrote this book called Venus in Furs. And what this book was based on was female dominance. And the character, the male character in the book goes to a female character in the book and wants her to physically and sexually dominate him. And this book was, of course, you know, they say art imitates life. And what I found was this book was so much a part of von Sacher-Masoch's life that he went to his wife and said, "This is what I want you to do to me." And they would go to Venice, a place where no one knew them, and he would have her, you know, perform, you know, female dominance over him. And you know, the most incredible thing is that this book was written in 18, if I'm not mistaken, I didn't write that down, but it was written in the 1800s, right? And here it is 200 years later, and you still have this same sexual idea of sadomasochism, just like sadism, just like bondage and dominance, is just a recurring theme in at least 2,000 plus 4,000 plus years of history, right? So you have to think to yourself, like, nothing, like my dad used to say, nothing is new under the sun. And I think that's pretty cool, you know, that you know, we're still understanding and learning about concepts that have always been there. And then so I learned about, you know, the history of it, you know, the history then goes up to talk about Germany. And after World War One, the German you know, civilization at that time was just utterly destroyed, you know, financially. You know, their economics were just not there. And so a lot of groups got together, a lot of people got together and formed these groups, and they confided in each other, and they found different forms of art that developed into different expressions of sex. And when Hitler came along, those groups were forced underground, but they were still there. So, you know, during World War II, what I learned is that not just on the side of the Germans or the side of the United States or the French or whoever was in World War II, in World War II, but you had these groups of people who, you know, it was talking about particularly men, but you had these groups of people who got together, and you know, some of them had to meet in secret, or you know, they formed these bonds and this brotherhood. And then after the war, they still met and they still had these bonds. And a lot of what we would consider sex clubs are rooted in this history, these brotherhoods that are formed, so much so that when a lot of soldiers in the United States came back, they formed, like, there were leather clubs that were formed in throughout the country, and a lot of these people had been very familiar with each other throughout the war. So, you know, that's just, you know, a brief history, man, of some of the stuff I've learned. I didn't even get into the 50s and 60s. I have a family member who is very, very good friends with Gloria Steinem. And so I'm going to try and get in touch with him and see if I can sit down and, you know, pick her brain about learning, you know, more history about the movement in the, you know, the 60s and the 70s and everything that she did, and see how that fits into the history of BDSM, because a lot of people think that it's physical. It's not physical. A lot of it is, you know, mental. And just learn, and, you know, I definitely want to learn about how all of this fits together and builds this culture and feeds into these subcultures, you know. So I'm about to get on out of here, you know. I'm about to hit the gym, definitely hit the gym, you know what I'm saying. You know, work on your, you know, work on your body, work on your mind, your spirit, you know, try to stay in a good space. Be safe out there, you know what I'm saying. Make sure you go get tested. Don't be afraid to get tested. Know your status, man. And no matter where you live, you can go to the county health department. They got different places. I just recently got tested, made sure, you know, everything was still on the up and up, and it is. And it was completely free. You know, a lot of people are afraid to go out and you know how, you know, if they're being safe. You know, don't put people at risk like that. You know what I'm saying? Know your status. As usual, you know, keep a good, you know, good head. You know what I'm saying? Try to stay in a good space, be around good people. You know, mental health matters a lot. You know what I'm saying? Eat right. You know, the holidays are coming up. I don't eat a lot of meat. I pretty much don't eat any at all. But I'm going to make it happen for a fried turkey. I'm going to sacrifice. Got to. I refuse to not eat a fried turkey this year. And I'm just going to be in the gym crying on the Stairmaster for 2 hours trying to walk it off. But I'm sure I'll tell you all about that. But yo, about to get out of here, man. Thank you for tuning in. You know what I'm saying? Look out for, got a raffle coming up, man. I got some good shit I'm going to give away. As usual, you know, check out the Instagram, the_laptop_chronicles. You know, hit me on email, thelaptopchronicles@gmail.com. Check me out on Twitter. I don't do a lot on Twitter. I pretty much retweet a lot of things because Twitter moves way too fucking fast for me. I'm like, whew, I do enough just to keep up with Instagram. But anyway, man, thank you for tuning in and listening. You know what I'm saying? And be safe out there. Peace.